When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Farmers Guardian is proud to work alongside the Rock and Roll Farming Podcast. For all the latest news and features from across the ag industry, head to fginsight.com. You'll also find a wide variety of advice pieces to help you and your farming business flourish.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming, episode 128. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I am heading up to Edinburgh to talk to writer and director Emily Jenkins. Emily, welcome to the show.
Hi, Will. Thanks so much for having me.
That's all right. How is lovely Edinburgh looking?
Do you know what? The sun is shining this morning, but it has been pissing it down with rain for the last few days. So I'm just hoping that we get a little bit of clear skies, because I'm going to go out on the mile and flyer and try and get people in to see the show tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll bet. So you're up in Edinburgh now and you work in London, but you grew up in Gloucestershire, right?
I did, yeah. So I grew up in a little town called Makenhampton, which is outside of Cirencester. And yeah, so I grew up in Gloucestershire and then moved to London when I was 21.
Okay, so from a farming family or just a rural village?
Not a farming family, but a tiny little village in the middle of nowhere surrounded by farms. So it was a very rural community. And yeah, just kind of grew up playing in the fields, if you know what I mean, mainly because there's nothing else to do. But yeah, it was, you know what the countryside is like. It gets dark and there's nothing to do anymore when you're a kid.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, it was gorgeous. Yeah, we just had a free roam of the village, really, which was great.
Yeah. Okay. So was it a love of literature generally or theatre in particular that sparked your interest and shaped your future career?
A bit of both. So I grew up in our village. There was a Shakespeare play that got performed in the manor garden by the local villagers every year. So when I was a kid, I became involved in that very early on.
Okay.
So had this kind of lovely summer every year, kind of playing about in the grass and doing Shakespeare shows in front of people having picnics. Wow. So that's kind of how I got into it, really. Just absolutely just loved it. I love literature as well. So I kind of initially wanted to do acting, because I did that as a kid. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older, I realized that the writing and the directing was the thing that really spoke to me.
Okay. So how old were you when you first started writing plays?
Well, it's funny. I did a lot of kind of writing as a kid, but the writing of the play, it was a bit of fluke, because I trained as a director after university, and so I was pursuing a career as a director, but it's very hard to kind of get your voice out there, and I wanted to take a show to the Edinburgh Fringe, so I kind of thought, sod it, I'll write myself a play, because if you do someone else's play, you usually have to pay for it. So I thought, I'll write myself a play, then it's free, then I can take it up to Edinburgh and I can, you know, show off my directing. But I came out of the other end of that. The show went really, really well. I don't know, absolute fluke. I don't know if it was lucky or not, but I won this big award called the Fringe First as a writer. So after that, suddenly I was a writer rather than a director, which was not the plan. So that's kind of how the writing came about. I just kind of wrote this play, and I was very lucky that people seemed to respond really well to it. It's called Rainbow.
Okay. So when you're writing a play, do the characters and storylines come easy to you? What's the hardest part for you?
Oh, it's all hard. It's really difficult.
Sure.
It's like writing is shit. It's just,
I can
it's
imagine.
Not fun. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. It's kind of, I don't know, the way I do it, I'm not very good at planning. I kind of word vomit.
Yeah.
So I just start writing crap on a page, and it just eventually becomes someone talking, and then someone else might start talking, and then only after I've written thousands and thousands of words that I kind of realise what the play's about. It's not the most economic way of writing, but it's the only way I can. I think it's because I didn't get trained as a writer, so I just kind of have to, you know,
Yeah,
word vomit is the only way I can describe it.
Okay. And when you're in the process of it, is it quite all consuming? Do you find it difficult to focus on anything else, or can you just switch the process on and off?
No. I'm not one of those writers who can like sit down 9 to 5 and do it. I really don't like it. Everything else is more consuming than the play. So my fridge, Netflix, cleaning my flat. If I'm writing a play, my flat will be so clean. All my personal admin will be done. I'll sort out my bank accounts or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I will do anything other than write. So I really have to like force myself to sit down.
Sure. Okay. And what was it like that first time when you wrote the play and you saw it performed for the first time?
Do you know, it was really special. It was really nice. And it's funny because as a director, it's kind of a weird one because not many directors direct their own writing. And it's a weird one because the act of directing is interpretation, but how do you interpret something that you've kind of, that's come from your own subconscious? Sure. Do you know what I mean? But it was really nice. I had three amazing actors. And it's kind of this thing, you're kind of watching it and you're absolutely terrified that no one will like it. But at the same time, you like it and you're going, oh, that's a nice line. And oh, I like that bit. So it's quite hard to kind of have distance, but you need it in order to get the show on. So it was really special and it was really nice when people reacted so well to it. It was kind of made it all worth it, you know, because getting a show to the Fringe is not an easy task or a cheap one.
Is it a hard thing to get into? Is there a lot of people trying to get their plays on there? Is it very competitive?
Yeah, well, there's, I think there's 5,000 shows on in Edinburgh this year.
Okay.
Like every single public space is turned into some kind of theatre. So pubs, churches, town halls, everything is turned into a theatre. So people just, you know, take their shows up and do them. And there are obviously kind of different venues. So there are some kinds of, the big venues have slightly better theatres, but you know, basically everywhere is a theatre. So it's relatively easy to find somewhere to do your show. But I mean, accommodation this year, for example, they've changed the laws in Edinburgh, and so the house prices just for August have like tripled or quadrupled. So for one room at the Fringe this year, I think it's around £1,200.
Wow.
For the month. Whereas usually it's about 300, 400. So just things like accommodation just make the cost of the show insane.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you won the award for your play Rainbow at the Fringe. That it must be amazing to get that recognition from your peers.
Oh, it was so great. It was so great. And I wasn't expecting it at all, because obviously I just kind of brought it up to do the directing thing. And then I got this call saying that I'd won this award, and I kind of didn't really believe it. And I didn't really know it was a big deal either at the time. I'd kind of just rocked up a little bit ignorant of the whole thing. But it was really great. And yes, we kind of went to this little award ceremony and got the award, and I've now got the plaque and it's on my wall. But it was really great, but also suddenly I had to figure out how to be a writer because I had no idea. So I then had like major second album syndrome for quite a while. Do you know what I mean? I was like, oh God, I've got to write another one, and I actually don't know how. But it was wonderful. And it's so nice because I haven't been back up in Edinburgh since I won that award. So it's been 7 years since that happened.
Wow.
So this is kind of a really nice return, and I'm taking another play I love, and that I've written and directed. So it feels kind of like a return to that kind of intimate, kind of personal vibe that I had the first time I was up here. Yeah. So it was really lovely.
Yeah, okay. And as you said, you were a director by training. That must bring a whole different set of challenges to writing.
Yeah, it does. It's a completely different brain. Uh-huh. It's, because writing is all about kind of, I suppose your subconscious and it's kind of, it's about you. And what you want to say and how you feel and, you know, and it comes out in other characters' voices. But as a director, it's the opposite. You know, all your focus is on the work. It's on the actors and helping them get the best out of it. what the audience are seeing and how that story is going to be told. So it's really, I kind of enjoy directing far more because it's not about me and I can just focus on telling a story, if that makes sense.
But
it comes with its own challenges. Just trying to shape something and work with actors and get the best out of them. And yeah, it's, but I really enjoy it when I'm in a rehearsal room because you just get to talk to people. Whereas writing is really lonely.
Yeah.
Directing, you are with people and working with really incredibly talented people to create something. And that's really special.
We're going to take a short ad break now to talk about agricultural weighing specialist Griffith Elder. Griffith Elder specialise in agriculture with their weighing equipment. They design, manufacture here in the UK and supply weigh bridges, portable weigh beams, multi-axle weigh bridges and a host of other weighing equipment for weighing on the farm. The scales are a great way to know how much you've taken from the field and keep track what you have coming in and going out. The portable weigh beams are incredibly easy to install, so no need for any groundworks and can be placed straight in the yard or moved from store to store as and when you need. All of their scales come with an extensive range of recording equipment options and farm management software, and one very popular piece of kit is their cab fob system, which enables the driver to record the weight of their load without having to leave the comfort of the cab. Built to last for decades, Griffith Elder pride themselves in making simple to install, easy to operate and proven longevity weighing equipment for all their products.
Yeah, and I suppose a huge range of different people and personalities as well.
Yes, absolutely. And sometimes you have to manage that.
I can imagine.
You know, and obviously as well, I think there's a lot of creatives in the industry, there's a lot of insecurities. So you've got to manage the insecurities and manage the different personalities in the room and try and get the best out of everyone. So you kind of have to adapt the way you work with someone to kind of suit the best way they learn or the best way they work.
So
there's a bit of kind of psychological assessment of people and trying to adapt yourself to help them in the best way. Which can be quite interesting but also quite challenging at the same time. I mean, on this show I've been really lucky. The two actors are just so talented, and also really lovely people. You know, we always say that usually on a show, there's usually at least one person who's a bit of a dick. And we've managed on this one. It doesn't seem like there are any dicks at all. So
yeah,
okay. We're doing really well this time.
Yeah, I suppose that's the same in any group of people. So now, anyone who's been to London will probably have at least walked past the Globe Theatre, one of the capital's most famous and recognisable landmarks, of course, and you get to actually work there. Do you get that sense of excitement every time you walk through the door?
I do. Do you know what? I really love it. The theatre, the Globe Theatre, is just a really special place. There's something a bit magical about it.
Yes.
So I feel so chuffed to be able to work there. It's really exciting. There's something about, I'm a big fan of you know, the fact that the actors can see the audience,
yes,
and the audience are just in the same light as the actors, so it's just this kind of big communal kind of experience, whereas I think a lot of theatre, you know, the audience are made to sit in the dark and just watch something happening over there in the distance,
mm-hmm,
you know, like a cinema but without HD. Yeah, the Globe, it's everyone is involved in the performance because the actors are talking directly to you. So there's something really magical about that, I feel.
I'll bet. Yeah, I'll bet. Okay, so tell us about your new play, Bobby and Amy.
Bobby and Amy is a dark comedy about foot and mouth disease, which is a bit of a random thing to write about, I know. it's a dark comedy. It's about a boy called Bobby and a girl called Amy, and they're growing up. They meet age 13, just at the end of the 90s, early noughties. Both of them are isolated in some way by bullies or family issues, and they meet and they form this friendship over the birth of a cow. So they go up to the farm and they help this cow give birth, and they kind of form this friendship. And then it follows their friendship through the kind of following few years. But in the background, we meet all the townspeople and everyone who's kind of in their lives in the local town. And but obviously, it happens during the period when Foot and Mouth hits. So halfway through the play, the fields get taped up. Foot and Mouth has hit the town. And the play really examines how that affects the town, how that affects the individuals in the town, but it's seen through the eyes of Bobby and Amy.
Okay, so you obviously lived through that yourself in Gloucestershire. Is that's presumably the effect it had on you living in the rural community at the time? That's where it came from?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was lucky enough that, we weren't one of the areas that was that was a huge cull. Mm-hmm. But I remember the day the fields were taped up, and I remember the day that suddenly, my friends and I, we were always, playing in the rolling fields, were suddenly confined to concrete and tarmac. And I remember the shift. It's a shock, mm-hmm. It was a real shock to suddenly not have the fields. Like the country, my whole area was completely shut down. And it had a huge economic effect on the area. It had a huge, effect on the mental health of the people in that area because, everything was changing. And I just remember the pyres and the disinfectant. And it was such a kind of epic, horrendous thing in our history. And yet no one seems to have mentioned it since.
No.
Least in my consciousness. I don't know what it's like, for you in the farming community, uh-huh. But personally, it's just not something that is ever been discussed.
No, it kind of, I've been thinking about it the last few days, and it's left such a vivid scar on the UK countryside and the people who lived through it. But even now, people almost talk about it in hushed tones, like it was a big collective trauma, which I suppose
well,
it
I
was.
I think it was.
Yeah.
It absolutely was a collective trauma. I think that's a really astute way of putting it. And I think, and the thing is, there's the people who are affected the most, because they're going through the trauma, they don't want to obviously relive it.
No.
But I think for, urban communities, they just have no idea.
Mm.
At all. And I think it's something that needs to be talked about because rural communities are such, they're such an important part of our, the country. Farming and agriculture contribute, some 61% of food eaten in the UK. It's such a huge part of our country, but it just seems like the media, the news, everything is just centered on the city. And at the moment, obviously, Brexit. And I think we're doing an injustice to the people in the communities who were affected by this horrific, as you say, trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was on the placement year from university at the time in Staffordshire. I was working on a farm in Staffordshire. And they burnt thousands of dead animals right behind the house where I was living.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible.
You must have really, really vivid memories of that then.
Yes, very much so. And one of the it's interesting really talking about because it as you say, it's not something I ever particularly think about, but over the last few days I have. And the farm I was working on, the farmer, he was a bit of a character, to put it mildly, but the two neighboring farms, they came and took their sheep. So they rang him one morning and said, completely out of the blue, he got a phone call, so we are coming this afternoon for your sheep. And they hadn't been tested, there was no lesions, nothing at all on them. And he said to me and the other two guys working on the farm, they are not taking my sheep, we are going to barricade the farm. And I was like 20 and I'm thinking, oh my god. anyway, so we were sort of prepared for a siege, and then no one turned up. It didn't happen and no one took his animals.
Wow.
It all felt so out of control and crazy,
But I'm not, I'm not surprised, the desperation of saving your animals. Also, what was so crazy was, how many animals were killed considering how few cases there actually were.
Yes.
That was insane. It was there was 2,000 cases and 6.5 million animals were killed. Because if you were on a farm which was next to a farm which was next to a farm which had had, you know, a bee fly from one farm to the other, then it might be contaminated. So it was, it was just, and I understand why they did it, but they just, it was insane, you know. And the amount, as you know, the amount of time it takes to build up a herd or you know, a flock, and then it to be wiped out in, you know, half an hour because of this thing is absolutely devastating.
So the play itself, as well as looking at the tragedy of foot and mouth and its effects, it is also then very much a celebration of British agriculture and rural communities then.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, it is a comedy, although it gets a bit dark, obviously. So yeah, it's a celebration of the people, and what I wanted to do was bring people an awareness of rural communities, you know, and how they function and how great they are. Because I grew up in one, and it was just joyful, you know, and everyone knows everyone, and it's a celebration of that. It's also very funny because we have two incredible actors, which is Will Howard and Kim Jarvis, and they play Bobby and Amy, but they also play 19 other characters.
Oh, wow.
So they play all the townspeople.
Wow.
And we don't have any set or any props. So, you know, we change location and we change characters just by them changing their bodies and their voices.
Okay.
So you really do see the characters through the eyes of Bobby and Amy, because Bobby and Amy are playing all these other townspeople. But it also makes it very funny because they play the school bullies, you know, they play the guy who works in the local fish bar, they play Farmer Rog, who is obviously very central to the play. So it's a celebration of all these different people who are kind of fictional versions of kind of the characters I grew up with. And yeah, just it's funny. We did six shows in London as previews of this. And it was amazing how many people came and saw the show and afterwards was like, oh my God, I remember that. I grew up in a rural community and it's so like that and it's so great. You know, and it is really a celebration, and just going, I just want to kind of remind people that the countryside is there.
Yeah.
That might be just because I'm in London, but it feels like, you know, it's only when there's a major disaster that it hits the news, whereas where the countryside just contributes, I mean, it kind of runs almost our economy in some ways, you know. It's so important.
For those of us who live in these communities, I live in a very rural part of northeast Wales, but I think we do sometimes feel a bit misunderstood. Why do you think that is?
Well, do you know what, I think it goes back to that really kind of sad stereotype of, you know, it, you know, what happens out in the sticks doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I obviously that's not true, but I think there is this kind of, you know, if it's not in the city and it's not, you know, all about Brexit. I mean, it's just Brexit, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah.
But if it's not in the city, if it's not sexy, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I think it's such a shame. But I think, yeah, because there are fewer people in the countryside, I suppose, than in a cramped area of London. Yeah, people think it doesn't matter, but I don't know why. This is the thing. I don't know why, and I think it's a real shame. Yeah, it feels like there's a kind of exclusion of rural communities in the general conversation around the world and our country, and, you know, just everything going on in it.
Yeah, okay. Do you think that there's a lack of stories from farming and rural communities in general like that? I mean, I know we have things like The Archers, and there's some really good, very good novels, but there's not an awful lot else, is there? Do you think that?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, yeah. I mean, from my experience, no. I mean, particularly in the theatre, what I found was most plays about rural communities, if it's set in a rural community, it's probably set in the manor house and garden of that rural community. Do you know what I mean?
So
we do have a representation of countryside, but it tends to be kind of a middle upper class representation of countryside, not the people who actually live and work on that land. We never actually meet those people. They might you know, in a play, for example, they might rock up for a scene, but you don't actually meet them as human beings. You know, I think particularly farmers, I don't know how you feel, but I just never see farmers represented. It's getting more so, you know, with some of the programs the BBC are doing, Country Farm and things like that. But yeah, I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast, really, to try and get some of the stories out there, because, you know, everyone, it's a life less ordinary, isn't it? You know, people are living these, whether they're first generation farmers or 20th generation farmers, there's a story to tell, you know, and, people are also doing some really incredible things on their farms. You know, it's not just all sort of wheat and cows. You know, people are really diversifying, growing different crops, breeding different breeds of animals and all kinds of interesting things. So it's, it's interesting you've said that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I think those stories need to be told, which is why I think your podcast is so great, because, yeah, there's still, I mean, you know, in this play, we've just stuck with, you know, herd of cows, so it's nothing new. And the farmer Rog he's been on the land for kind of seven generations, mm-hmm. so it's a proper kind of old school mm-hmm. version of farming. But this is it. There is a kind of stereotype around farming, which is, you know, fields and cows or fields mm-hmm. and sheep and a bit of wheat and a tractor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's
yes.
that's kind of what the stereotype is, and I think it's such a shame, because it's such a fascinating, interesting, kind of diverse set of skills, jobs, interests that seems to be just limited to this one stereotype sometimes, which I think is a real shame.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so when does the play start?
So it starts tomorrow. It opens on the 31st of July.
Okay.
And it runs until the 26th of August. And it's on every day at the Edinburgh Fringe at Pleasance Courtyard at 12:45, except the 12th. We're having a day off on the 12th. So, yes, and it's an hour long. And, that's when it's running.
Okay, so anyone listening who does want to come and see it, where can they find out more?
So if you go to bobbyandamy.co.uk, that's our website, which you can find all the information on there. And if you want to follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, all of those, Twitter, it's Bobby and Amy Play.
Okay. And are you hoping after the run in Edinburgh, are you hoping to take it nationwide?
Yes. So that's the plan. We're really doing the show in Edinburgh in order to build up interest, because what we want to do is take the play around rural communities. We want to bring it to rural communities, you know, those people most affected by the story that we're telling. It's great to tell it to, you know, London or Edinburgh, but we want to go to the places it's about. Ideally, we kind of want to go around the country following the trail of foot and mouth.
Okay, that's interesting.
That's the idea. It depends how the scheduling works, but that's the plan.
So
if anyone's got a town hall or a theatre that they want to invite us to at the end of this year or in the new year, then we would be well up for it. And again, they can go on the website for more information on that. But yeah, we really want to, this isn't about just kind of putting a play on in a city and mm-hmm. you know, showing the people who always go to the theatre. It's going to rural communities and having conversations with the people who actually were affected by this, or remember it, or, you know, that's what we really want to do.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if it comes anywhere near me, I'll definitely come see it. It'd be fantastic.
Absolutely. We'll definitely aim for your area. We'll let you know.
Okay. So let's wrap this up with the traditional extremely hard hitting questions, if you are ready.
Yes. All right. Go for it.
Okay. What is your all-time favorite song?
See, I found your question. This is a really difficult question.
It's so hard, isn't it? I know.
It's so hard. I tell you what. I really love Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, and, classy. Classy.
Yeah,
choice.
And she does a version of "Mack the Knife." It's a live recording where she basically forgets all the words and makes it up. And it is still the most insane performance that you've ever heard. Like, the singing is incredible, and she's just making up the lyrics as she goes along. And I love that. I love that song. So I mean, that's my that's
That's a really, really good choice.
Honestly, it's brilliant. Listen out for it, because she just forgets it, but then, yeah, just sings rubbish, but it's just brilliant.
I'm going to look that up, because I do like a bit of Ella Fitzgerald. Okay, what's the best meal that you can cook yourself?
I'm not a big cook, I'm going to be honest with you here. I can follow a recipe.
Yeah.
I mean,
me too. That's about the extent of my skills as well.
Yeah, I can do a roast and I can follow instructions.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm always busy, I kind of live off just, you know, pasta. So I do a nice little salmon in soy sauce and maple syrup thing, which is very nice.
Well, that sounds nice with maple syrup. That's a nice twist.
Yeah, okay. I recommend. Very easy, bit of soy sauce, bit of maple syrup, stir it up, pour it on some salmon. That's you're done.
Lovely job. Okay, we'll try that. What's the best book you've ever read? Again, this is really difficult, I know.
It is really difficult. I did an English literature degree, so I've read quite a few books. Although I don't know if I enjoyed many of them. Do you know what my favourite book of all time is? The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That's a really good choice. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely love it. I just think it just represents British humour.
Yes.
And I read it kind of once every couple of years. I read it 10 times.
Did you like the film version that came out a few years ago?
Nope.
With Martin Freeman? No, I didn't. Either.
Absolute rubbish.
No.
Yeah.
It didn't get it at all, did it? No. Okay.
It was too American. Do you know what I mean? The whole thing with Hitchhiker's Guide is the British sense of humour, but they were trying to make it American sense of humour, and it didn't work at all.
No, I agree. Okay, what's your favourite Shakespearean quote?
Again, a difficult one, but there's this line I really love because it kind of tastes so good when you say it, and it's Barone from Love, Labour's Lost talking about Cupid because he's fallen in love and he doesn't want to fall in love. So he says, he describes Cupid as this whimpering, whining, purblind, wayward fool.
I like
and
that.
It just That's sounds good. So good.
Yeah, I like that. I like a Shakespearean insult. Fantastic. Okay, then. And lastly, do you follow any agriculture related social media accounts? Any farmers on social media? And if you do, which is your favourite?
Yeah, well, we're a big fan of the Farm Safety Foundation Yellow Wellies.
Yeah.
Because it's raising awareness for the physical and mental health of farmers. And that's something we talk about in the play a lot as well. And I think it's just something really important to discuss, you know.
Yeah.
You know, about, because it can be quite a lonely, I mean, I don't know your experience, but it feels like it can be quite a lonely life. In some ways, you know,
without a doubt, isolation, huge problem in farming, I think, at the moment. Very high rates of suicide, tragically. So yeah, I think anything like that is absolutely fantastic getting it out there.
Yeah, and the other one we do is the DPJ Foundation.
Yes.
Which again is about the mental health of people in agriculture.
Yes.
I think as well, there's a kind of, you know, don't talk about your feelings vibe, particularly, I mean, where I grew up, definitely there was a kind of, you know, you're isolated, but don't talk about your feelings, which just compounds any mental health issues that you have. So I think combating that and just, talking about experiences and talking about life and talking about problems and bringing that front and centre is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I spoke to Emma Picton Jones, who founded the DPJ Foundation, for the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and what she's doing is incredible. She's a force of nature in what she's doing. Fantastic work.
Oh, absolutely. It's just so worthwhile, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking to us, Emily, and best of luck for the run in Edinburgh.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Will. It's been so nice talking to you.
You too. And I will definitely look out for it coming around the country. And hopefully I'll get the chance to catch up with you in person.
Awesome. Yeah, that would be great. We'll keep you posted.
Okay. Best of luck for the next few weeks. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.